So there's often the assumption that God should extend his love to all maximally.
Yeah, just give it to everybody, right?
Yep. You're still merciful if you save everyone. Well, but I guess this world exists where God cannot save certain people. That's what some on the other side say. But can we say that the extension of this evil, less love maximizes God's love? If we are to speak of divine loves being maximized, is this the way it has to be done? And can it be done for all people? Christensen says, no, and here's why. Without ordaining at least some significant evil, it is not possible for God to maximize his love to any. Well, how so? The maximal display of God's love towards his creatures is uniquely located in his mercy. And mercy as an act of divine love makes sense only when it comes in the face of evil. And so this also explains the gravity of evil. It's not just evil a little bit. It's the evil and the big things. Yeah. And then God redeems those things. He's merciful to people. He extends mercy to great evils. And we see to what degree he is merciful by contrasting it with the evil acts. And again, you know, we all would want to point to the Holocaust or genocides or all these things, but the perfect God who became a man lives a perfect life. He's the one that's demicide. He's murdered. Mm. And that should be the biggest idea that we could come to think of. So if you want to put, you know, the sexualization of children or useless murder or the prom queen gets killed by the drunk driver and the drunk driver survives. All terrible, all bad, all evil. But look at the contrast of sinful creatures.
Perfect Son of God who
to that. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And so Christensen tells us that mercy comes in two ways. First, it comes to sinners who don't deserve it because they have been perpetrators of evil themselves, right? So he extends mercy to sinful people. So that's the first way that mercy comes. And then second, he tells us it comes to those who have been victims of evil, both natural and moral evil. The greater the evil, the greater the mercy that pardons its perpetrators. That's the ones that don't deserve it. And heals the wounds of its victim. Those are the ones who have been victims of evil. Right, so those are the two kind of ways he says that evil comes to the to the sinners who don't deserve the mercy, and to the judgment of the perpetrators. For both these kinds of divine mercy to occur, actually the non-judgment, for both of these kinds of divine mercy to occur, he tells us people will have inevitably and necessarily suffered at the hands of wicked people or unfortunate calamities. Right. And so this rules out any kind of maximal love that prevents at least some evil from taking place. You gotta have it, right, is what he's getting at here. So God's love cannot prevent evil from happening if he intends to maximize his love via mercy to others, whether it be the perpetrators of evil or the victims of evil, right? And furthermore, he says, God can maximize his love in this way only to some and not all.
Right. And we have to remember that God exists not as only one characteristic. He's not only love. He works in perfection with all his other characteristics. So the divine simplicity of God comes into to stake here. And so we see if this is the case, if he wants to magnify his mercy and be merciful, then these other things have to take place. And so his love is balanced by his mercy and his judgment. His judgment is balanced by his love and his mercy. And his mercy is also balanced by his love and his judgment and all the other ones that I haven't mentioned either. All right, so nonetheless, some will still protest. All right, let us concede, they say, that maximizing God's love via mercy means permitting evil. So why doesn't God permit evil but then show mercy to all, especially to sinners in the face of their unbounded rebellion.
All right, so there it is. Okay, fine. Let's say that, you know, this mercy, evil must be permitted for God to show mercy. So let him have the evil, but then show mercy to everybody. Right. That's the objection here, right? Yeah.
What prevents him from showering everyone with a boundless grace and a feat of universal salvation? Couldn't the death of Christ atone for the sins of all so that all might be saved?
Right, and Christensen tells us a big no, right? He says, because Romans 9:22-23 indicates that God's wrath on some is precisely what magnifies the mercy he pours out on others, right? Thus, this maximization of divine glory, and this is what the greater glory theodicy argues, he says, is connected to two important realities. First, maximal love to God's creatures is uniquely displayed in his mercy. So that's an obvious, that's a no-brainer, which requires, by the way, that evil be experienced by others, right? And second, this mercy is further maximized when contrasted with those who get what they deserve, right? Divine wrath. And so this contrast between wrath and mercy highlights and maximizes God's glory in ways that could not happen otherwise, right? So God has to judge some, as it were, if he wants to accomplish this glory, right? And mercy is maximized through the judgment of some, right? Because notice, all should be judged, and yet God does judge some, but he shows mercy on others, and so his mercy is magnified, and that's what he's trying to get at here.
Right. And again, he doesn't have to show mercy. He's not required to, because then it's not mercy, it's not grace. But he does, and so he's exhibiting qualities from himself to his creation that that he can maximize those qualities, and so that's why he allows some evil and restrains others. Our hearts are, if we were not constrained by God's common grace, then we would be even worse than what we are. And so there's God acting in the general capacity, but he enters in a specific type in specific revelation there. So the fall and our hopeless capacity to the curse and to our own helpless wretchedness places us in a desperate context whereby mercy becomes an inconceivable and glorious gift. Thus, if all receive mercy, mercy becomes domesticated, banal, expected, even demanded.
Right. It's no mercy at all if everybody, I mean, that's now it's just what's expected, what's we demanded, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's meaningless.
I plugged myself into the equation. I came out perfect on the other side. This is what must happen. When a vile sinner sees the fierce wrath that he most certainly should have incurred from a just and holy God and was rescued from it instead, he joyously marvels at the mercy of this one who retains the right to put us on trial, this one who is judge, jury, and executioner. Right. It says, you know, we should kind of contemplate and look at the nastiness of hell and say, I deserve and belong there as well, but I'm by saved out of it. Yeah. And not just saved out of it, but saved into the family of God. I have the right to be called the son and or daughter of God. And, you know, that
joy,
contrast.
The blessedness, the presence with God in heaven and that sort of thing, right?
Being made right, being made whole, being made the way that was originally intended. All these things are the stupendous that we don't deserve, but yet God.
Yeah, but God. Yeah. That's right. So God's glory, he tells us, in Israel's deliverance was magnified precisely because of the unmitigated judgment that the Egyptians both incurred and that they deserved, right? God is under no obligation to extend his mercy. Otherwise, it would not be mercy, right? It would be merit, right? Mm-hmm. What he owes us. It would be a wage. So, nor is God unjustified to carry out the full weight of his wrath on willful recalcitrant sinners, right? In other words, God is just and he can judge sinners. He doesn't have to give mercy, right? So when God carries out his justice, it highlights those rare and precious moments, Christensen tells us, when he chooses to show mercy, right? Thus, if God's love is to be maximized, it can be none other than a discriminating love, right? And this discriminating, this maximal love to some and not all is what supremely magnifies, that is, maximizes God's glory.
Right.